Hi guys, you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. This is DJ Cat D, and you're listening to my show, Inside the Mind of Cat, where we're going to talk about random things that go on in my mind. And today, I want to apologize for not showing up on my show at 5 p.m. on Friday. And yeah, this is my guest, Brad.
How are you doing, Caitlin?
And let's get started. So I didn't come in because I was afraid. I was afraid of starting my show. And I'm here to admit that to you guys. I just hit my face.
We were talking about the fear of failure and how that was affecting you. And I thought it would be fun to describe to the listeners what was going on in your mind that made you, you showed up for the show, right? And then you came right to the radio station, but then you backed away. And what was going on in your mind there?
You know, I was just really nervous. And I know that, you know, the other students there were also really nervous too, but I commend you guys for the strength that you guys had to keep on going. But yeah, I was nervous. I was nervous about people judging me about what I was going to say, or nervous about whether I could run the machinery or like equipment or not. Yeah, I was nervous about a lot of things, and I would call it self-sabotage.
Yeah, you know, it's not that uncommon. All the way back to Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, they all talked about the power of as we think within ourselves, so are we. And yet this fear of failure is something that so many of us have to deal with. And so what do you think that you is different about you tonight? Because you're sitting in here in front of the microphone, and you're doing what just 48 hours ago, Friday night, you could not do, or as you said, self-sabotage. What's up with that? A lot of people relate to it.
You know, I think that for me, self-sabotage is a huge problem, and therefore I don't get started on a lot of things. And it's in the past, it has kind of inhibited me from doing the things that I need to do. So here, I'm here to share with you why I feel that way, and perhaps it's going to help you guys too. I'm not sure. So yeah.
You know, we were talking about that issue that some people are afraid to succeed because in order to succeed, you have to risk failure. And I'd be interested to hear what your response to that. Do you think that applies to you, the fear of success? Because in order to succeed, you've got to be willing to risk failure. And so people sometimes decide, you know, it's better to not even try, because at least if I don't try, then I won't fail.
Yes, I definitely do relate to that a lot. And that's why I've just not started on a lot of things. And in the end, the best way to go about it is just to do it, to just do it.
Sounds like you're quoting the Nike commercial.
Yeah, there's also a video that I could play right now, but I won't. But
the whole concept of self-sabotage, what are some examples in your life where you look back and you've thought and you self-sabotaged, or you haven't started because of the fear of success? Any thoughts along those lines? I remember, can I tell you? Now, my job, I professionally teach public speaking, and the very first class that I taught was online. There were people all over the world listening in. And we came to the point in the class where I was modeling for them how to do it, and I completely had a brain cramp. Of the five elements that I was teaching them, I forgot three. I forgot two of them, and I forgot them so badly that I wasn't even aware that I had forgot them until the end. It was a total failure. It was about the worst possible mess I could make of it, and yet that was many years ago. It didn't destroy me. It didn't undermine my career. It's amazing how, have you heard the phrase, if it doesn't make you bitter, it'll make you better?
Yes, I have.
Well, there's a Bible verse that says, The successful person isn't the one who falls down. The successful person is the one who, when falling down, gets back up. And we all can relate. We all fall down. Nobody's perfect. But the successful person is the one who's willing to get back up.
Yeah, definitely. And I can relate to that, and I can see that in a lot of people. And sometimes I feel ashamed of the fact that, especially, I feel very ashamed of not coming to the radio show when I was supposed to, because you're right. It's too late now for me to do that show, but if I didn't pick myself back up and come here, I wouldn't have achieved anything at all. So.
Yeah, and how are you feeling right now in front of the mic for the first time, doing what you didn't do the other night? How does that make you feel right now?
It feels much better.
And how about the nerves? Are you super nervous right now? Are you feeling like you can barely do it? Are you feeling almost paralyzed, or does it feel fairly natural?
It's getting more natural. Yeah, it's not as bad as I thought it would be.
You were showing me a list of things. You've titled it. What's the name of the title of the show again?
Inside the Mind of Cat.
Yeah, and yeah. I saw a variety of things that you're interested in. What are things, topics that the listeners can expect in future episodes and future broadcasts?
You know, I watch a lot of TV shows, and I also listen to Korean pop music, or I'm interested in that. I don't know. There are a lot of things I'm interested in that I can't think about right now.
Now, I'm just curious, because this is fascinating, because I was getting to know you a little bit earlier on. And you, correct me if I'm wrong, but you are Vietnamese, mm-hmm. and yet you have an interest in South Korean culture. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
How did that come about?
I was introduced to it by someone, and it became my obsession because I loved it so much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And have you ever been to South Korea yourself?
No, but I did think about studying abroad at one point, but hopefully one day I will go to South Korea. That would be really fun.
Okay. Well, I've been to Seoul, South Korea, so why don't you go ahead and ask me, what was my experience in Seoul, South Korea? Go ahead and ask, just for the fun.
So you told me that you played baseball in South Korea earlier?
I did.
So what was it like after that?
Yeah, well, I played baseball up until age 23. In fact, I played 2 years of professional baseball, and I retired at the ripe old age of 23. And one of my best experiences, actually, ironically, was in Seoul, South Korea. I was pitching with a team called Athletes in Action, and we were over there when I was 20, in between my sophomore and junior year in college. And we played 7 games against them. They were one of the best amateur teams in the world at the time. We lost 6 games, except for the one that I pitched. And it was on national television. We played in front of 40,000 people, and we won. And so the next day, I'm walking around in this marketplace called Itaewon, Seoul, South Korea. In fact, this was 1982. 1988 was the Olympic Games.
So how did people react to you, since you're not Korean? So I feel like maybe did you feel out of place, or?
Caitlin, I'm so glad you asked that, because I am 6'6", and I'm walking around Seoul, South Korea, and people had saw me on TV. It was the first and only time I really kind of felt famous, you know, because everybody was pointing to me. They had seen me on national television. And it was a fascinating experience. And we couldn't really, I didn't talk the language.
Yeah.
But we communicated in such nonverbal language. And it was a tremendous experience.
So people were like fanning after you.
Yeah, it made me feel like a celebrity. It really made me feel good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my Seoul, South Korea story. But you were asking me something earlier. And we were talking about this, I think is very interesting. And that is the difference between happiness and success, right? Comparing happiness versus success. And you had some interesting thoughts on that.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how people could be successful and not happy, because someone out there could be making tons of money right now and just seem like they're living the life, but you never know what they're feeling on the inside. Like, even with, and
Like with celebrities who commit suicide, for example, it seems like they got everything going for them.
Yes. That's like...
How many... Are you thinking of someone who committed suicide? Like there's Michael Jackson. He didn't commit suicide, but that's questionable. There's Kurt Cobain. There's a lot of celebrities. But how about the whole situation where people, celebrity couples, for example, they look so happy. They portray themselves as so happy, and the next thing you know, they're getting a divorce. So there's really more to it than what appears on the outside. What are your thoughts on success? How would you define success?
For me, success is just like, it is something that's fulfilling. I want to do something that's fulfilling and at the same time, you know, makes me money. So that's success for me. Or success could also be just living in the moment and just feeling right. That's also a success for me. I don't know. It's just everything positive can be just a tiny little successful moment.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I love doing this kind of stuff. This is fulfilling to me. But I'm watching you as you're doing this show, and you really seem to be enjoying it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you're fulfilled by doing it. We're kind of having some fun here, right?
Yeah, we're having some fun. Yeah.
You know, I have an acquaintance. This has been a few years ago because he's since remarried, but he's very, very wealthy. He had achieved the highest rung on the corporate ladder as a CEO, and he had the biggest house on the hill. He lived in a mansion, and he tells the story of how he had achieved everything that, in his mind, as a young man, he needed to achieve to become happy. He had all the money in the world. He was well respected by his peers in the business world. But in the end, he sat in that mansion all by himself alone, because in prioritizing business and prioritizing riches, his wife left him. He lost his marriage, and his two daughters left him. He lost his family.
Right.
And it really portrayed for me. I always remember that.
That's really sad.
It really is sad. But the good news is he learned from that. And he changed his ways, and he came to realize that certainly most people would agree that more money is better than less money, but not at the expenses of the things that are important that money can't buy. Things like a love, things I like to call the prosperity of the soul, right? Peace that transcends circumstance, joy that isn't dependent on happiness, you know, right? Things make us happy. Stuff can make us happy. Circumstances can make us happy, but I view joy as an inner trait that is a part of true success. I think of contentment. A lot of people in this world are discontent. Did you have a thought on that?
Definitely. I do feel that there are a lot of people who just aren't happy.
What's your take on why? What do you think?
I feel like there could be a number of reasons. They could feel just like they're not doing something that's fulfilling to them. They could there could be a void that they're trying to fill. For me, I know that when I'm not happy, I feel like I've failed. That's failure could definitely cause unhappiness.
That's interesting. I'm really curious as to for you to elaborate a little bit on that. So failure makes you unhappy. Fear of failure causes you to not do what you're supposed to do. You know, my daughters are 18 and 20 at a very early age. I'm interested in your take on this. I told them that if they do what they need to do when they need to do it, there'll come a time in life where they'll be able to do what they want to do when they want to do it. But if they don't do what they need to do when they need to do it, they're going to be in that position for a very long time, and that's pretty miserable, right?
Yeah, definitely. I would not want to be in the same place for the next, like, in 10 years. I would definitely not want to be here. Well, yeah.
Yeah, and we talked about how that phrase, paralysis by analysis, right? Did you relate to that?
Yes, I definitely did relate to that.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that I tend to just skirt away from things when I think that I can't either I can't do it or it's just not going to be good enough in my eyes and other people's eyes. But this is like a really revealing.
It like, is interesting. And yeah. I think your listeners can relate to this because none of us are perfect and we're all in process. You know, I remember we mentioned a little bit about my baseball background.
Yeah.
I went on to play professional baseball, which was a rare privilege. But do you know when I was a freshman in high school, I was the worst pitcher on the freshman team. I didn't win a game my freshman year, but you know what happened? I didn't quit because I loved the game. And what happened, I was 5'8" as a freshman. And over the summer, I grew to be 6'2" and 6 inches in 1 year. And all of a sudden, that made me better in baseball. But, you know, even that wasn't the key to happiness. Just the love for the game was important to me. That was just playing the game was successful to me. And I think about this broadcast. This is your first broadcast, right?
Yes.
And explain to the listeners how you're feeling. What are the sum total of your emotions? Because I know there are a lot of other students that are involved with this class as well, and they're just getting started.
You know, I feel a lot less tense than when I first picked up the microphone.
Just 15 minutes ago?
Yeah, just 15 minutes ago.
Wow.
I feel a lot less tense, but I still feel nervous about what people are thinking out there, which is, you know what? I'm going to ask you guys, like, what are you thinking? You know, but I think that the fact that I was thinking that prevented me from ever just starting out in the first place. But now I'm here. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I can tell you, Caitlin, that I've never I've worked with people for a long, long time. And I think it's human nature. We all want to be liked, right? We all want to be thought of as successful or good at what we do.
Yes.
But I heard the phrase a long time ago that we'll stop worrying about what people think about us when we realize how little people actually think about us. Because if most people are like us, which they are, then they're worried about themselves. They're thinking about themselves. And here's the thing I taught my daughters. You tell me what you think of this.
Okay.
When they were in junior high, they had a dance that was coming up, right?
Right.
A school dance. It was their first school dance, but they were terrified. They didn't want to go. They said, "Dad, I do want to go, but I don't want to go." I said, "Girls, explain to me. I don't get it. I don't understand what it means."
Yeah.
Okay. And they said, "Well, we want to go, but we don't know how to dance. We're not good dancers." And you know what? I told them something.
What'd you say?
I said, the difference between a good dancer and a bad dancer is the person who has the confidence to just get out there and start moving around. And everybody will see that you're moving around. They won't look at you. They'll assume that you're a good dancer.
Yeah.
But if you get out there and you draw attention to yourself, or you sit on the side, "Oh, I can't do it."
Yeah.
Then people are going to look at you as if you're a bad dancer. And I'd love to talk in the next segment about that whole concept of confidence and how important it is to success in life.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you say that because I do want to discuss that. But right now we're going to take a break and see you when the music stops.
It's a fool who don't believe. I fly all the way to the moon just to walk it down your street. stronger than God hoped it could be. Baby, all it takes is just a little faith in me to feel like I can save.
Guys, and we're back. This is DJ Cat D and my guest here, Brad. And we're here to talk about confidence. And I actually didn't introduce who Brad was. Brad's actually a tutor for me because I was so nervous about this class and how to, or this radio class and how to organize my thoughts. I needed help, basically. I needed help. So, yeah, and Brad and I are going to talk about confidence and how that can affect our life and how we function.
And I was thinking that it would be really funny for you to tell the listeners what we were just talking about, because I was asking you, how did you wind up getting a tutor? What motivated you to give me a call?
You know, my mom actually, she saw that I was freaking out about this class, and she was just like, okay, you need help. You need to call somebody. And she was just really adamant about it. She was just really adamant. But yeah.
And you just got a text from your professor, right? And he was encouraging you to be honest?
No.
Oh, okay. My bad. Mm-hmm. Well, I really feel like transparency is so critical. I have a phrase that says something along the lines of, we impress people with our successes, but we only impact them with our realness. Because everybody can relate to failures. Everybody can relate to being in process. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is, if all we do is try to impress people, most of the time that's not even real. Like, that's, I'm curious, Facebook is a place where people are notorious for trying to impress people, right?
I completely agree, because there are times when I use Facebook and I overpost things about myself. And then there are times like this where I just think, wow, why did I post all of those things for? And now I just don't post anything, because you know what? I can have my own accomplishments and I can share them with myself. I don't need to tell the world that I did those things
Yeah, and you know, I've heard and I've actually read a couple of them, that studies are coming out where Facebook is actually a source of great discouragement
and depression
for people. I see you relating to that. Why is that?
Facebook causes me anxiety. It causes me a lot of anxiety, because there was a point in my life where it's like, oh my gosh, this is going to get so many likes or blah, blah, blah. Like, why would I care? But you think about that, and why else would anyone post these pictures up? I think that you post them up to get attention from people, and like, because if you didn't want attention, you just could keep them at home and share them with people in real life.
Yeah, it's really interesting that people, it seems, are starved for attention. And I know with my own daughters, they both went through what I would call a Facebook phase, where if they got a lot of likes for a certain picture or a certain comment, then they would be happy. But if they didn't get a lot of likes, then they would be discouraged or upset. And that's so unfortunate, to be bound by what somebody else thinks of you. Now, you were mentioning the subject of confidence, and I was just curious, how do you feel now after having done our first segment, as opposed to when you started? Are you more or less nervous? Do you have more or less confidence? How has your feeling changed just by the fact that you've started to do it?
I'm feeling a little bit less. I mean, I'm more confident. Sorry. Yeah, I feel good right now, but I'm not going to think about the butt right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this whole subject of confidence and where it comes from, we were talking a little bit about that. And let's dialogue about a little bit about that. Where do you think confidence comes from, or what affects somebody having more or less confidence? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I feel like, again, no matter how much people want to deny it, they always are worrying about what other people think, or even what they think of themselves. And bottom line is, judgment is what causes people to either lose or gain confidence, whether it's like their own judgment or it's someone else's judgment. Most of the time, especially at a younger age, I feel like it's other people's judgment that causes them to change the way that they reflect on themselves, change the way that they express themselves, because then it could it could restrict them or make them feel like they need to restrict certain things about themselves or change the way that they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned that I have two daughters, and I don't know if I said they're age 20 and 18, but we've talked about all along, and I'm interested to know what your experience has been, because this is so real. If you're a girl growing up in the United States of America, you're watching television or on social media every day that is telling you what you don't have that you should have, what you don't look like that you should look like. A total setup for failure, a total setup for discouragement. And that's what it's set up. I'm curious, is your experience, do you relate to that? Commercials that say, this is the color hair you should have. This is how tall you, this is how thin you should be.
I definitely can relate to that a lot. I actually did pageants for a while.
You did?
Yeah, I did pageants for a while. And I felt like there was a certain standard that you had to meet when you are in pageants. Because I'm shorter than most of the girls that were competing, I was also a little bit rounder in a sense because I was shorter. But most the judges were looking for girls who were tall and thin. Oh yeah, I should explain to you guys that I did Vietnamese pageants. So we had to wear a certain dress. It's called an áo dài, which is the traditional Vietnamese dress that Vietnamese girls wear to school, like in Vietnam, or they wear to special events. There's also one that's designed for weddings. But basically that dress is made for a woman who's taller and thinner. And because of that, I feel like I was at a lesser advantage because I'm definitely, that's not what I look like.
And as you reflect back on those experiences, was those pageants something that you wanted to do, or did your family encourage you to do that?
I wanted to do it. I think that I did. I wanted to do it, and I appreciate it, the opportunity to do that, because like my parents definitely were supportive of that idea too. Yeah. But what I was saying is that I wanted to do it, but I didn't know all the things that needed to go into it. It was a lot of energy. It was a lot of, it was just judgment. Basically, people are just, you're there to be judged. And that was something that I knew was going to happen, but I was not prepared for the impact of.
What kind of impact do you think it's had on you even now as you look back? How has that influenced your life and your life perspective?
For me, I think that it, I'm proud that I did it, but also it also changed the way that I felt about myself for a long time. I felt like I was, like we were talking about how the media what the media tells you you should look like, the pageant, like the whole pageant experience, the whole pageant atmosphere, the people that are involved in pageants, they want you to look a certain way. And if you don't look a certain way and act a certain way, you won't succeed. And that's why I learned a lot from that. But it also hurt me because I didn't fit the mold. I didn't fit the tall, skinny Asian girl mold that they wanted. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like to me, from my perspective, that an awful lot of people become miserable in life because they are fighting a losing battle, trying to be something that they really can't be, when it seems like, from my experience, that the most fulfilled people, the most joyful people, the most contented and satisfied people are those who are content with who they are. The phrase, they're happy in their own skin. You know, here's a funny story. I am 6'6". My wife is 5'1". People have joked about that. We've been married 27 plus years. People joke about that all the time. But here's what's interesting that most people don't realize. Picture, have you ever been like to a basketball game or a football game in a stadium? Anyway, when you look down, they all look small, right?
Yeah.
And they all look the same size, right?
Right, right.
Well, that's the way my life has been. Honest to God, I can't tell the difference if a woman is 5 feet tall up to about 5'7". Now, if she's taller than 5'7", then I'll notice that she's taller than most. But think about it. I'm looking down at an angle. So even though people think it's funny that there's such a height difference between us, it's not funny to me. It would be all the same.
Yeah.
And isn't that interesting? We talked about earlier, as you think within yourself, so you are. It's interesting to me that there are two aspects of truth in life that I think are important. There's what's true, right? The facts. But then there's also people's perceptions of
right.
what's true.
Yeah, definitely. I think that perception is key here. It's not just other people's perceptions. It's your own perception.
Wow.
Because you need to, it's kind of redundant to say this or counterintuitive to say this, but whether you like it or not, you're always going to care about what other people think. But anyone who's trying to motivate you, anyone who's trying to help you is going to say, oh, don't care about what people think. So I feel like the whole scenario like that is just all about trying to find the balance between them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yes, you should care what people think because sometimes they're helping you, but then you should also weed out the things that aren't true.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great comment. I think you're right on. I think that we can't help, but that's the way we're wired. It's important to us, but what people think. But the question becomes then, what do we do in response to that?
Definitely.
Do we let our fear of what they'll think paralyze us or keep us from doing something because we're afraid that they'll think we didn't do it right, or we're afraid to do something because of what they might think? Or are we going to say, you know what, I'm being honest with myself. I do care what people think, but I'm going to go ahead and do what I feel best anyway, and I'm not going to let what they think dictate what I do. And that seems to be a critical difference between those who succeed in life. And I was going to ask you this, Caitlin. There's a phrase, I don't know who created it. It's an old adage, and it says that success happens when preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah.
And opportunity is available to all of us. This studio is open to all students, right?
Right.
But the big question is whether or not we're prepared. And preparation is the key. I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, being prepared definitely helps, because a lot of why I couldn't come in was because I felt like I had ideas down, but I didn't feel prepared, because all I could think about was, what's going to happen when I sit down in front of this microphone and start talking? Am I just going to freeze up, or where are my thoughts going to go? So I think that preparedness really matters.
I was going to say, you know what I really believe, and I wouldn't say it if it's not true. That is, the idea inside the mind of Kat. I love that idea because there's a lot inside there, and it's very interesting. You were talking about the pageants.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that beforehand. We didn't talk about that at all. We didn't prepare to talk about that topic, and yet I believe that was incredibly interesting because the preparation was already there. That was your life experience.
Yeah.
And those are the things that I think that are going to enable you to excel with your future shows, because there's a lot in there, and it's just natural for you to talk about the things that that you're experienced with.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't really think about that, although sometimes I forget that I competed in pageants. So it's interesting. The dynamic with pageant life with me is really interesting. But maybe we will cover that in a future show.
I think you
or I will cover it in a future show.
I got to tell you, I don't have a lot of experience with pageants, so I can't really help you there.
Yeah.
But I bet you there's a lot of your listeners, a lot of females that would be really interested to give you some input on that.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
So it sounds like you were getting ready. We're close to a break.
Yes. We are going to take a break now. And when we come back, you're going to find out what's on my mind then.
Bet that I lost. and you see my eyes looking back at you, no disguise. I'm not sure who you think you'll see. I'm just hoping you still know that it's me. Oh, what if it's true? A bitter estimate inside. Oh, oh, there seem to be two. One steals a love and the other one hides. Yeah, can we call it a loan till I'm paid in full for the seeds I've sown? Yeah, can we say that I've grown in some way that we may have yet to be shown? Oh, if I'd only known what your heart cost. Oh, can we call it a loan and a debt that I owe on a bet that I lost?
Again, and my guest Brad, and we're going to talk about anxiety now and close up with anxiety and how anxiety can be inhibiting and it can also help you in a sense. I think that anxiety to a certain degree could be helpful too, but yes, anxiety. I myself suffer from extreme amounts of anxiety all the time. And it prevents me from talking to people. It prevented me from getting on the you know, it prevented me from doing the show initially. It prevented me from sometimes, let's talk about specifically social anxiety, because I've had issues leaving the house sometimes, and that's like, that's really rough. Like, because I would think about what people are going to think, why my behavior has changed about certain things, why I just all of a sudden, sometimes I just overanalyze everything, especially what people think. That's what we talked about earlier, is how caring about what people think stops you from doing things. And to me, for me, it's on a grander scale than I feel like a lot of people don't have, or they could have. I don't know. Are you guys going to relate to me or not? Maybe, maybe not. But what I'm trying to say is, yes, we're going to talk about anxiety and how it affects the way you live, the way you function.
You know, Caitlin, help me understand this, because I have two acquaintances. Both of them have severe social anxiety. And I would love, in all seriousness, for you to help me understand it. The one gal, she's in her mid-30s, and she's terrified to get on the BART train. Something happened, I don't know what it is, but every time she gets on the BART train, she feels like the world is closing in on her. Mm-hmm. She feels claustrophobic, and she has to get off. And there's another gal that I know who is, she's 60 years old, and this never used to happen, but all of a sudden now, she's terrified to drive on the freeway.
Wow.
So she won't go anywhere that requires freeway driving. How do you understand that? What's up with that? What's up with that?
This is a very vulnerable and revealing topic for me to talk about, because I think it is pretty evident that I have social anxiety when I'm around campus these days. But let's start over here. Yeah, social anxiety, what we wanted to explain. You asked a question, right?
Yeah.
Why they would react that way? For me, it's because I feel like I'm not normal or I'm not like, or in general, it feels to me like I'm not acting the way that I am supposed to, or I had previously been acting.
Yeah.
So I feel like people are noticing that, or people are thinking about that, which could be true to an extent, but maybe it could be hyperbolized in my mind.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe something happened to that one friend on the BART where she was just so traumatized that she's afraid that it's going to happen again. Or sometimes even when I get socially anxious, I'll call it that, I'll think about what the person next to me is. I'll be very hyper aware of what I'm doing and what the person next to me is doing and what people are doing. I'll be hyper aware of that, and I'll get really awkward, and I won't notice things that I'm supposed to be noticing. And then I think about people noticing that too. So it's kind of a avalanche effect. So I feel like maybe that's what she's experiencing, because I know when you're on a BART, everyone's so close together, and that's part of claustrophobia, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious about this. Tell me what you think about this. I come from a divorce home. When I was 8 years old, my mom and dad got divorced, and so I became the man of the house in a very real sense at age 8.
Wow.
And when I was a child, I used to love that. You know, I remember in high school, I worked at a gas station making $3.20 an hour.
Wow.
And I remember on Christmas, I was the provider for our Christmas presents. Oh. It was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
But here's the downside. I learned that it was not okay for me to not be okay. I always had to be okay for the sake of my mom and my sister.
Right.
And that was terribly unhealthy, because the truth of the matter is, none of us are okay all the time. But I didn't feel like I it was my right or I had the opportunity to that. So I it messed me up until I was 35 years old. It wasn't okay for me. And I think this social anxiety issue, it seems like I was going to ask you, just talking about it, is that helpful? And I'm wondering about the environment. We were talking earlier that it's a sensitive subject. There are probably a lot of people that suffer from it, but
yeah,
they don't.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think the fact that I'm talking about this on the radio, even though at this time maybe no one's listening, but it's going to be on a podcast online. There's going to be a chance that someone's going to listen to it. I know that my professor is going to listen to it. So the fact that I'm saying this out loud to people that I don't trust everyone, and you know, so the fact that I'm talking on the radio at these people at, right?
Talking to them.
Or to them, about these vulnerable topics. It's liberating.
Wow.
Yeah, it's liberating, but it's also, it's liberating, but it's also kind of, wow, I did that. What are people going to think now?
Yeah,
but it is pretty liberating.
And you said we're talking about social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned that you know you're talking to whoever's listening, and you know that it's going to be critiqued, which would stereotypically make a person even more anxious, right?
Yes, yes.
And yet that's what for me, like 15 years ago, when I finally, it became okay to not be okay, because sometimes I'm not okay,
mm-hmm.
That was incredibly liberating to me. And the fact, if we can have an environment, a safe place where there's people that aren't going to condemn us,
mm-hmm.
because we're not okay, or not going to condemn us because, hey, I'm anxious right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an incredible place to be, if we have relationships where it's okay to not be okay, it's okay to say, you know what, I'm freaking out right now.
Right.
I think that's an incredible gift. And I was going to ask you, I'm curious, anxiety probably comes from a variety of places.
Right.
For you, I was thinking a worry, maybe,
yes.
Or fear. What?
I think actually, fear. Actually, I think that anxiety stems from fear, and fear. Actually, fear can cause a lot of different emotions. Fear itself can cause anger, anxiety.
Wow.
I can't think of another one right now, but it does. Fear is just the root of why people do things. I think that. Fear can motivate people too. It could be a motivator, but I don't know where I'm going with this. But fear is the root of anxiety. And yes, a lot of people are afraid of things. And I think that society would label that as anxious.
Yeah, you know, they say that there are two great motivators. You touched on that.
Mm-hmm.
One is fear, and the other is love. I think that probably every single listener can absolutely relate to fear.
Yes.
And the experience of fear. So I think it's a very relatable topic.
Yeah.
That we're talking about here.
Yeah, definitely. And perhaps I will touch up on that on my next show, because it looks like we are running out of time. So again, this is DJ Kat D, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So tune in next time to find out what's inside my mind, or inside the mind of Kat. Bye.
Just give us your number. Mm-hmm. Give it my number.